Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those of you who, like me, have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that would be a complete waste of our time to try to fix them. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning such schemes isn't hateful, the most compassionate and caring thing we can possibly do. In our concluding hour, we're going to continue to examine Yahweh's response to Paul's letter to the Galatians and the difference between how Yahusha cited the Torah, prophets, and Psalms versus the way that Paul manipulated the text to serve his interests. If you'd like to engage in this discussion, toll free, 877-300-7645. There's a story that most would just pass off and say, you know, it's just no big deal. But I think it actually is a big deal. I think it's something that is going to happen a lot. It is a story that's quite similar to the story of the 49ers Smith here a couple of weeks ago. If you'll recall, the 49ers lineman didn't much care for the invasive search that he endured at an airport and spoke out against it. And, of course, he was summarily hauled off to jail and is now pleading no contest to three felonies. This occurrence was not in Los Angeles, which I think is where Smith ran into the obnoxious federal agents, but this occurred at a bar in the home of GCN, Minneapolis St. Paul Airport. A Fox News anchor, Greg Jarrett, and I don't know Greg Jarrett from Adam, he refused to cooperate with police who were called about an intoxicated man at a grill. Now, the fact is that his crime was failing to cooperate with police. I don't want to cooperate with them either. I find them, all too many of them are just absolutely obnoxious. They're arrogant. They're not all that bright. They're belligerent. They think that badge gives them all sorts of authority that the Constitution does not afford them. They are way too prone to be aggressive. They're way too prone to pull their guns. I don't know. Maybe Greg Jarrett was drunk and disorderly. I don't know. But nonetheless, he didn't cooperate with police, and that's a crime. And that shouldn't be a crime. We ought not have to cooperate with them. They ought to have to cooperate with us. We're paying the bills. Anyway, the Metropolitan Airport Commission spokesperson told the newspaper that reported this story that Jarrett was taken into to custody around noon at the Northern Lights Grill, a standard airport grill. The police said he seemed intoxicated. He acted belligerent and refused to follow orders. So you're belligerent if you don't follow their orders. Who are they to order him around? Who are they to order any of us around? Why is it that we've entered a police state where we have to follow orders? Jarrett, 59, was booked into the county jail on a charge of obstructing the legal process and interfering with a police officer. God, what's happened to our country? This is just so revolting to me. Now, I don't know. The guy may have been way out of hand, out of line. But it ought not be a crime to say, you know, I don't want to just go away. I don't want anything to do with you. No, I don't want to follow your orders. No, I haven't surrendered my freedoms. I have no interest in what you are trying to accomplish here. Just go away. But to be put in jail on a charge of obstructing the legal process, You know, I am so glad that God's Torah means teaching and not law, and that there's no Hebrew word for obey. This whole idea that you have to surrender your freedom to the orders and legal processes of others, I find debilitating, demeaning, counterproductive. And I am certainly glad the ultimate authority in the universe doesn't have these kind of rules. Aaron, it's a story, obviously, in your hometown. Is there part of this that I have missed, or does this article on it from the Associated Press cover what happened?
This is actually my first hearing of this story.
Okay, so much for staying on top of the local news. You did tell me a story though in the break. We both have a distraction in our lives, and in fact, I received a email this morning from a good friend, a gentleman that I correspond a lot with online. And he was talking about the need for distractions. He loves Yahweh as much as I do, very involved in sharing the story of the covenant. He said, you know, I have distractions just because, you know, otherwise your eyes cross, you know. My distraction happens to be sports, which is your distraction as well. There's a story out of the sports world. What is that, Aaron?
The latest story is that the owner of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team, Mark Cuban, who's fairly famous outside of basketball as well,
yes,
very successful man, but
yeah,
he released a statement kind of regarding Donald Sterling about how everybody has a little bit of prejudice and possibly you're slightly racist. Everybody has their own views and prejudices. I mean, the example that he used was, if I'm walking down the street at night at 2 in the morning and there's a hooded guy coming towards me, I'm going to cross the street for safety. Well, now he's being labeled a bigot, a racist, just anything you possibly could from that.
Yeah, it's the exact same case that was brought in the Trayvon Martin issue, where it was the President of the United States complained that when he would walk down the street, that sometimes he sensed that Caucasian individuals would try to avoid him. And the Cuban incident is even more an extreme version of it. What those who are advocating political correctness want is for us to cease being discerning. They don't want us to exercise good judgment. Now, in the case of the African-American man walking down the street late at night and you expressing some concern, that is actually based upon good judgment. Now, I'm not a racist. In fact, I would be the opposite of a racist. Given the opportunity to go up and engage maybe 100 people that may be standing in a public area, I'm far more likely to go up to a person of color, whether it be, no matter what the color. And, you know, by race, I'm Sioux Indian. And I was, in all of my jobs, I was, when I was building businesses, if two equally or even near equally qualified candidates would apply for the same job, I would always give the job to a person from a minority community, just realizing that two things would happen. One is that those individuals have had to develop a backbone. They've really had to in many cases, separate themselves from their community and decide that, you know, I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to make a life for myself and for my family. I just respect that kind of ambition and character. And also because I thought that the more communities we had represented within our companies, the richer the work environment would be. And so I'm the opposite of prejudice. If I have prejudice, then I would be guilty of affirmative action. But that said, I'm also a very rational individual who likes to do a lot of research. And I'm going to speak off the hip now, and typically if I were making a presentation on this topic, I would turn to the FBI crime lab reports, but and the Department of Justice. But my recollection is that a African-American individual is more than 10 times more likely to commit a crime against a Caucasian than a Caucasian is to commit a crime against a white individual per capita. And that that African-Americans that represent, I don't know if it's 8, 10, 12%, but small percentage of the overall population of the country commit a disproportionate number of the crimes. It may be in the range of half of the violent crimes in the country are perpetrated by a tiny minority, which means that if you're being discerning, if you're aware of the facts and you're being discerning, if you're exercising good judgment, you're going to be more concerned if you see an African-American man walk down the street late at night than if you see a Caucasian grandmother walk down the street late at night. The facts are the facts. And if you stop considering the facts, then you make yourself vulnerable. A great example of this would be the reason that I'm so troubled by the activity at airports and the invasive search of my person is that there is a 0% possibility that I'm going to be a terrorist. You know, Caucasian non-Muslims are responsible for essentially 0% of terrorist acts. And African, Arab, and Indonesian Muslims are responsible for about 99% of terrorist acts. So we ought to be discerning. We ought to exercise good judgment. And what Mark Cuban said is right. It's not racist. It's exercising good judgment. I'd like to get your view on that when we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break, Aaron. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Aaron has more from the citations of Mark Cuban, and they are interesting, as well as an ESPN response to Mark Cuban, which I find inappropriate. But I do want Aaron to share not only his just general reaction to what I talked about at the end of the last segment, but then also to go in and complete some of the Mark Cuban statements. Do you think, Aaron, that it is appropriate to exercise judgment as it relates to what you perceive to be a potentially threatening circumstance by walking to the other side of the street?
Not only do I think it's appropriate to do that, I think it would be a poor decision to not do that. That's just common sense and human nature. It's self-preservation more than anything.
Would you consider yourself racist?
I would not.
Yeah, I'm in exactly the same boat. In fact, there was an example in Mark Cuban's comments where he talked about a skinhead, in the same circumstance, covered in tattoos. And, you know, I just love the way he rephrased it. He says, you know, if I walk, I would walk across the other side of the street if I saw a young black man wearing a hoodie. And you know, he didn't say if it was an African-American woman, a very slim chance of violence, according to the statistics. He said if it was an old African-American man, he's not going to change his course. Again, very slim correlation with violence statistics. But if a young African-American man, he's going to go across the street. But on the other side of the street, If he sees a skinhead covered in tattoos, he's going to view that person as even more threatening, and he's going to go back onto the other side of the street where he just left, which, you know, is showing that he's exercising good judgment, not racism. Why don't you share some of the other lines from Mark Cuban?
Yeah, in that same interview, they talked to him. This all came because they were discussing the Donald Sterling situation.
Of course.
And in that same interview, he... let's see. He was asked about how he thinks they can keep bigotry out of the NBA, and this is probably my favorite quote that I've seen from the interview. He said, "You don't. There's no law against stupid." I think that summarizes the whole situation fairly nicely.
Yeah. You know, it's what he is discussing is not racism. It's not bigotry. But what Donald Sterling said when he was baited was bigotry. Now, it's really thin bigotry in the case of Donald Sterling because he was trying to have sex with a African-American woman. And so it's pretty thin bigotry, mind you, in his particular case. But the fact is, you know, I would love to get anti-Semitism out of the world. They can't do it. You know, it's impossible to do so. The only you can do is expose it and condemn it and cause those who are still open-minded to recognize that it's foolish to be anti-Semitic, just as it is how much you're depriving yourself from experiencing if you don't like people of different skin tones. I mean, if someone were to look at me and say, "Oh, I don't want to talk to that individual because, you know, they've kind of got that olive skin tone of an American Indian, you know, the dark beady eyes of an American Indian, and the, you know, the hair color and all that sort of thing," you know, I would it bother me? No, it wouldn't bother me. But you know, it might shortchange themselves an opportunity for an interesting discussion, and I can tell you that routinely. You know, if I'm out in public, I love to talk. You probably notice. I'll walk up to anybody and everybody, and every time I'm given the chance, and I have, you know, a variety of different people I can walk up to and engage in conversation, I'll almost always choose someone who is different than me, just because I'm interested, and my life is enriched by those conversations.
And the other quote that I really like from this article is they continue talking about Donald Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Cuban, he's pretty much the only owner that spoke out and said, "I don't think he should be forced to sell the team. I don't think that the punishment fits the crime."
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree, by the way.
I agree as well.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a slippery slope to set that precedent. But here's the other quote that he had. "I'm the one guy who says don't force the stupid people to be quiet. I want to know who the morons are." I really agree with that view.
Yeah. Now, Donald Sterling, I think, suffers from two problems. And I don't think either of them is racism, by the way. I think one of the things is that he does have a superiority attitude. And his superiority attitude that is because of his wealth serves him poorly. If you lose the common touch as you go up and you view yourself as a lord over individuals, that's a really dumbing idea. And the second thing is, he's old. His mind isn't functioning well anymore. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. We're talking about the story of Mark Cuban and his comments on Donald Sterling. He was opposed this morning on ESPN, was he not, Aaron?
Yes, he was.
And what was the basis of that?
It was a former San Antonio Spurs forward named Bruce Bowen that was on ESPN's Mike and Mike, which is their daily morning show, which personally I don't care for it, but...
you and me both.
Yeah.
It's mostly just personal chatter.
It's a pretty long interview, but he basically said, "Oh, no, we can get rid of all this prejudice and bigotry," and Mark Cuban coming out and saying that everybody's like that and we just have to deal with it is contributing to the racism or prejudice or whatever you want to call this.
Yeah, it's, wow. And that's part of the thing that I said was so troubling when we first began to cover Donald Sterling's issue, is that we have jury-rigged society. Society has been jury-rigged as a result of politicians, the media, and academia primarily, such that if you now want to express a position on a racial issue, it can be extremely well-researched, can be accurate, or on sexual preference that can be well-researched and accurate. You're prohibited from doing so without paying an enormous price. And I don't think you can have a free society that and prevent people from expressing themselves in this way. You know, if Donald Sterling had come out and either said and or in practice prohibited African-American players on his basketball team, prohibited African-American coaches for his basketball team, prohibited African-American management for his basketball team, then you'd have an absolute case against him. Then he is acting in such a way that is not acceptable in our society. But that's just simply not the case. I mean, if you're not allowed to say something that people don't want to hear, then are you only able to say things that that everybody agrees with? And then who's the determiner of what is acceptable to say? What do you think, Aaron?
Well, you can say whatever you want, but they weren't asking that question looking for a controversial answer. They were looking for the answer that the other 29 owners would give.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Cuban is not the type of guy that's going to not give his... He's very outspoken, we'll go with, sometimes to a fault, but I think in this situation he did what was appropriate.
Yeah, I think he's the only one of the owners that is willing to stand up and say, you know, what he did is stupid. But to force him to sell his team because he said something stupid is not the way we want to behave in basketball or to behave in society in general. That's not exercising good judgment. God, I hate to be in a position where I'm agreeing with Mark Cuban, but... that's where I am. I happen to agree that when we move society to the point that we can't say things that are unpopular, that are inconsistent with political correctness, then we've moved into a position that is where we no longer have freedom of speech.
Well, and this is one of those areas where saying what's unpopular makes it then labels you. Rather than just, okay, we can agree. If you say that and I differed, this situation you can't go, okay, agree to disagree, move on. This is going to be me saying, okay, you're a racist, which is a pretty wide brush to paint with.
Yeah. You know, and we... my concern on labels is when you apply labels to an individual, you most often shortchange them. I'd much rather debate what someone is saying and challenging what they're saying than simply to apply labels. One of the coping mechanisms in society is the application of labels. For example, when I speak out against Paul, a devout Christian is going to label me as either demon possessed or satanic, the label valid? No, not even remotely. But that's their way of trying to deal with it. They would try to label me as an atheist, and of course I'm not an atheist. The application of labels almost always serves us poorly. We ought to do a little homework, a little investigation, and figure out what is at stake here. Now, in the case of Donald Sterling, I happen to like the players on his basketball team. I think Rivers is in fact, if I were to have my own basketball team, Rivers is the first, Doc Rivers, the first guy I would hire. I think he is talented, and he's entertaining. He happens to be an African-American man. I think Chris Paul is the best point guard in the league. He happens to be an African-American. The most articulate player in the NFL is the sixth man for the Clippers. Jamal Crawford, I believe, is his name. I listened to an interview that he did the other day. It was the most articulate, entertaining, humble, but yet interesting interview I've heard from a sports personality in a very long time. I could listen to that man talk all day long. He happens to be an African American man. My favorite player in the NBA is Chris Bosh. He happens to be an African American man. So you know, it's a situation where I like the players on that team, but I'm certainly, as a fan, not going to root for the team so long as Donald Sterling owns the team. I think he should be allowed to continue to own the team. But, you know, I'm going to vote my fanship away just because I think what he has said and what he is like is disgusting. But why can't we just say the man's disgusting and what he said is stupid and move on? What do you think, Aaron? Oh, we lost Aaron here.
Sorry, I was screening. We have Glenn as well.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you were screening the call.
Yes,
okay.
I was. Yeah, I think that would be the appropriate course of action. And then if you want to get into the basketball side of it, I don't like the idea that they can force somebody out for that.
Yeah.
It is a private organization. They can do whatever they want. I just think that that's going to be detrimental to them if they set that precedent.
Yeah, and I think, too, if they take the approach of, you know, that you have players like King James that saying that, you know, I may not even play next year if he still owns the team. And, you know, James probably is my second or third favorite player in the NBA. I really like James. But if they buckle to that kind of pressure and now you have the majority of a organization establishing the way to treat a minority view, that's not good either. That's the whole problem with democracy, is it's the imposition of the majority and the tyranny of the majority over the minority. So, boy, I tell you what, I'm really uncomfortable here, though, because I really think that Donald Sterling is a complete idiot. I mean, I find the guy wholly and completely repulsive. So.
He definitely is. And then one of the things to comment on LeBron James's comment.
Yes.
LeBron James, in most of the controversies, we'll call them, in the NBA world, he puts out the majority view. I mean, most of the statements that he makes sound like a PR guy wrote them. And I don't knock him for that. I mean, the guy is the best basketball player in the world. And he's trying to not ruffle anybody's feathers. He just wants to be remembered for his career.
Yes.
So I don't blame him in this particular scenario.
No, I don't either. I don't either. In fact, I think LeBron James, the reason I like him as an individual and as a player, is that he stands out. He's willing to speak his mind. And most people, not most, but many have turned against him because they don't like the fiasco that was promoted, not by LeBron James, but by ESPN. I'm just flabbergasted that the decision is pinned on LeBron when it was ESPN that hosted it and ESPN that made a fortune from it. LeBron gave $2 million to charity, didn't make a dime from it. So the fact that people turned on LeBron rather than ESPN over the decision, I embrace the guy, and I'm not being critical even here in his position. He has every reason to try to endear himself to the majority because the majority turned ruthlessly on him, and I think his response is extremely mature.
Well, and I think that separates him from the pack as well. I mean, he is, without a doubt, the best basketball player in the world right now.
Yes,
and I would say probably the best since Michael Jordan.
Yes.
If you look at some of the other stars since then, Kobe Bryant, Allen Iverson, I can only speak for the past 10 or 15 years.
Yes.
Kobe Bryant, Allen Iverson, all these guys with personal issues that are known for not being terribly nice people outside of basketball, with the exception of maybe Shaq.
Yeah,
who seems like a pretty good guy.
Yeah,
but all the
guy.
Other ones have these personal issues and get in trouble all the time and things like
Michael
that.
Michael Jordan didn't get in trouble, but he's a jerk.
Yes.
And Michael Jordan is a real jerk.
You very rarely hear a story about Michael Jordan being a really nice guy, which...
Never. Never.
Yeah.
I've met Michael Jordan. He's a jerk.
Yeah, where LeBron James seems to be just a character guy most of the time. I mean, he is out somewhat boring, but nothing controversial.
I'm never fond of his interviews because he really is pretty much milquetoast. Hey, we've got Glenn on the line. Let's hear Glenn's input. Stay with us here, Aaron. Hello, Glenn. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Aaron. Hi. And it's morning for you, I know.
It's okay.
I have another item to add to your list of the list of unredeemable Babylonian institutions you rattle off at the top of the program.
Mm.
Professional sports is soap opera for guys.
It's
slavery. They buy and sell people. They draft them. They trade them. It's a bunch of ultra wealthy white men.
Yeah, I know. But by the way, they do pay their serfs tens of millions of dollars in many cases. So and the serfs have a collective bargaining unit and free agency. It is pretty different. But I will tell you that keeping the masses entertained has always, and therefore distracted, has always been an enormous part of Babylonian society. You know, in Rome, for example, it was the Colosseum, and people witnessing gruesome entertainment to keep them distracted from what their government was really all about. Sports plays that role in America. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'd like to take one more swipe at the racial issues here. Many of you know that I'm a businessman by background. I'm one of the few Americans that have actually led multiple IPOs as the founding CEO of companies that I conceived entrepreneurially and built. In one of those companies, I did business with Koreans, Japanese, and Chinese. In fact, I had the opportunity to do business with Chinese, both Taiwanese Chinese and Communist Chinese. And I can tell you that in that experience, that these are all Asians, that if I engaged the same way with a Taiwanese, Chinese business person as I would engage with a Japanese or Korean business person, I would have failed miserably. It is absolutely essential if you're going to do business, with a, individuals of a certain race and their culture that you understand where they're coming from. You know, for example, when I was in, Japan, you're constantly, as a buyer of products, you're constantly offered sexual favors, girls made available to you. Not my thing. I don't want to have relations with a girl for hire. But if I were to tell the Japanese business person that I thought that what they were doing was disgusting and immoral, I would lose any chance of doing business with them. I just politely decline. When I was in Taiwan, the culture is that you provide a financial incentive to the individual that you're doing business with. So a buyer receives a percentage of the business that they are conducting. Now, that was not my thing. And so I made it really clear. I did not want any financial exchange with me. Typically, you know, they're done in cash, too, so it's non-disclosable. I said, no. I want everything to be above board. But I recognize that is their culture. Now, I also recognize that with a Japanese business person, if you didn't go to a great extent to paper over your agreement, to have lawyers work it through and give great respect to the documentation of your agreement, that you would be considered someone unworthy of business. But in Taiwan, never had a with the Chinese, never had a a written agreement. They were all handshakes all the time. And with Korea, it's kind of a blend of the two. And so there are benefits of knowing who you're working with and what their proclivities are. Now, are there Taiwan Chinese individuals who can't be trusted? Absolutely. Now, I didn't run into any of them, but it doesn't mean that they're not there. You know, are there Japanese business people that don't have xenophobia and who will look at another race? Because when you go to business with Japan, you need to know that the preponderance of Japanese will look down their nose at you. They will view you as inferior to them for no other reason than your skin color. Is that 100% of Japanese? No, but it's certainly the preponderance. And so you need to understand the differences. When I was growing up, my father was an anti-Semite. And in business, virtually every one of my best, most productive and enduring business relationships was with Jews. We just got along fabulously. I can't explain it other than we had an affinity for education. We had an affinity for trying to do the right things for the right reasons. We had an affinity for long and engaging discussions. Whatever the reasons, it was my reality was the opposite of my father's. And so over time, I had such resounding success with Jews racially that very seldom was an engagement with a Jew based upon them being religiously Jewish, but racially Jewish. I sought out Jews to do business with because my experience was always so good. If I was doing business with a Jewish individual, I let down my guard because it wasn't necessary. But now, there is also a religious influence to this, not on the Jewish side, but, for example, the worst treatment that I've received in business are from evangelical Christians and from Mormons. You know, if a Mormon would come up to me now and say, I have a business proposition from you, I wouldn't even listen to it. Now, is that fair? Are all Mormons unethical? No, of course not. But my experience with them is that they've all been unethical. And so there are reasons sometimes we ought to be discerning and that our own experiences guide the way that we do business in the future.